And thank you so much for joining us on another edition of Ask the Experts. I'm Dave Callender, and joining me today from Mosaic Counseling and Family Services, Bob Wilson and Kristen Graham Seymour, who are counselors, and Julia Manuel, who is the coordinator of the Family Violence Project. On the show today, we'll be talking about what is a healthy relationship and how do we strengthen them. And we'll also be discussing a little bit about the Family Violence Project as well. So why don't we kick things off by introducing ourselves. Julia, you go first.
Hi, my name is Julia Manuel, and I'm the coordinator of the Family Violence Project of Mosaic. I've been with Mosaic for about a year and a bit now in this position. Prior to that, I was with the Victim Witness Assistance Program, and prior to that, I was with the Family Children's Services for about 15 years. So my job at the Family Violence Project is to coordinate services to victims of domestic violence.
Hi, I'm Bob Wilson. I'm a full-time counselor at Mosaic. I've been with the agency for about 7 years, and I do mainly counseling with adults around such areas as depression, anxiety, grief, some couple counseling as well. And I also present a couple of groups in the format of sort of public interest courses, one around managing depression and boosting self-esteem, and the other around managing various types of anxiety.
And hi, I'm Kristen Graham Seymour, and I'm a counselor full-time at Mosaic. And I've been there for just about a year now. And I have a background in mental health and working with people with anxiety, depression, bipolar mood disorder, borderline personality disorder. I'm running a group right now for DBT skills and individuals that are able to come to that. And I'm looking forward to being here today to be able to talk about couples and relationships specifically.
All right. Well, then why don't we just get right into it and talk about healthy couple relationships? We all think we have one, or at least we hope that we have one, but maybe we just don't get a chance in our lives to talk about what is a healthy relationship.
I think it's really important to be able to address healthy relationships in terms of three specific aspects, foundational aspects that are trust, honesty, and respect, and that people are able to manage those three pieces, first of all, and then to be able to build on that in terms of communication, to have effective communication, to be able to ask for what you want, to be able to say no to what you don't, and to be able to have the ability to have active listening so that you're really understanding where your partner is coming from. It's important to have a sense of individuality, to have some boundaries in there as well, so that that you are an individual and that the relationship doesn't collapse upon itself, that there's not specific enmeshment or codependency issues, that individuals are themselves first and able to relate to one another. I think it's important to have time together, to have some intimacy, and to be able to effectively problem solve. It's really important to be able to be on the same page and move forward in issues because they come our way every day.
Mm-hmm. So what would you there we've got the basis for a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. What indicators denote that a relationship is not as healthy as it should be?
I think that comes when there's sort of an imbalance of power within the relationship. I mean, a healthy relationship is about equality, but when there is no equality, I think that's when issues arise. So then you can get into that imbalance and, you know, power and control, and there's different aspects of power and control because it can take into a lot of factors. So you can look at the use of intimidation. You can look at emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, financial abuse. You can look at using the children as a cohesive tool, using male privilege even, you know, that I'm the king of the house and you do what I say and, you know, my needs are met first before yours or the family's.
Mm-hmm. Where does money come into play? What if one spouse makes more money than the other? Does that often lead to an imbalance in the power structure?
I don't think it's necessarily if one spouse earns more than the other. I think where the imbalance comes is if one spouse is controlling the finances of another. So, like, if and a majority of victims of domestic violence are female, so I will sort of talk more about the female being as a victim as opposed to the male. But when you've got a spouse who's saying to the other spouse, you need to tell me where you're spending your money, bringing home grocery receipts, explaining why they spent more than they should have, or not even giving them any money, no credit cards. So it's a so they're controlling that person because now that spouse has to go to the other person to ask for money for groceries and buying stuff for the kids and things like that.
All right. So what do we do when we realize there's an imbalance of power in a relationship? How do we start to make that turn around and be a bit more healthy?
Well, I think that's when, that's when, like, sort of the Family Violence Project or services that women can reach out to, and men too, if they're a victim of domestic violence or violence or family violence. We have, like at Mosaic, for example, there's the credit counseling is one area that somebody could come and say, okay, these are the issues that I'm having. How do I deal with this? There's also like support services. So like this, the women's outreach program through Women's Crisis Services, where that woman could come in and have support services from that, from the outreach program in respects to how do they do safety planning? How do they, if the woman's looking to leave that relationship, how do they do that in a planful, safe way? And even if that woman wants to stay, what are some of the things that, some of the tools and the skills that we can give that woman to stay in that relationship but be safe at the same time?
Now, Hope, go ahead.
Oh, and I was just going to state that that's where couples counseling can come in, of course,
exactly.
Right? Yeah, to be able to work out those issues if they're not extreme.
Right. And that's the other piece. It has to be like when we make a referral to the couples counseling or counseling, it has to be both spouses that are willing to come in to address that issue. Sometimes, though, what can happen is that one spouse can come in and get the assistance, and then the other spouse then will come in because they want to know what's being said and have their piece given as well. So
it's important that everybody's on the same page and moving forward with that, right?
And then sometimes what happens when you've got a domestic violence situation is that one spouse is sort of forced to attend counseling, sort of like through court orders or, things like that, saying that they have to go. And sometimes that makes a difference as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's say that you are in a couple relationship and you know that things are starting to go downhill. Should you immediately make an appointment to come in, or are there some things you can do on your own? Just, talking to each other that can help improve things.
Absolutely. It's what I stated earlier in terms of spending time together, having some aspect of intimacy, and to be able to incorporate some boundaries around, being able to ask for what you want, to be able to say no for what you don't, right? There's an interpersonal effectiveness attached to that. And in terms of being able to problem solve, be able to sit down and to create a win-win situation for both individuals who are involved.
All right. I'm wondering about some other aspects of couple relationships. You say, it's important to make sure you're getting what you want out of the relationship as well as your partner. Sometimes in a relationship, when you're not getting what you want, you stray outside of the relationship, and that causes guilt and the whole bit, and you eventually end up telling your partner, and then, of course, there's this whole infidelity thing. Do you help people with those sort of problems as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there are issues that are difficult to deal with, right? And maybe people don't have the skills to be able to do so immediately and need to be developing that specifically in terms of communication and being able to reach out to the partner, to be able to sort through those types of feelings, to be able to come to a better issue.
And it's also about the trust building again.
Absolutely.
Right? So you have to get that trust back in the relationship, and that takes time. And sometimes when you've got two people who are dealing with an issue, that's not always something that they can work out on their own. So coming to Mosaic for couple counseling would definitely be an asset to their relationship.
And that is the foundational piece, thanks, Julia, in terms of trust and honesty and respect, right?
So if you'd like to get in touch with Mosaic, all you have to do is call them at 519-743-6333. You can find out more information online at mosaiconline.ca. I'm Dave Callender. My guests this hour from Mosaic Counseling and Family Services, Bob Wilson and Kristen Graham Seymour, counselors, and Julia Manuel, coordinator of the Family Violence Project. We're going to come back with more of Ask the Experts in just a couple of minutes here on 570 News. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dave Callender. Joining me this hour from Mosaic Counseling and Family Services, we welcome Bob Wilson and Kristen Grain Seymour, who are counselors, and Julia Manuel, who is the coordinator of the Family Violence Project, as we continue our discussion about healthy relationships and how to strengthen them. Now, in this segment of the show, we're going to be talking a little bit about managing mental health issues in a relationship. So what are some of the mental health issues that a couple could be struggling with?
It's important to recognize that there are many mental health issues in our community right now, and people are suffering right now with depression, anxiety, bipolar mood disorder, borderline personality disorders, other disorders. And bringing that into a relationship specifically can cause issues and problems. And how do you solve these types of things? And how are you able to manage them? It's really important to be able to sort of address some of those pieces and be able to identify a pathway, a route. Mm-hmm.
When it comes to certain disorders such as depression, anxiety, and some of the others that Kristen mentioned, one can see a variety of ways in which it can have impact on relationships. For example, a person with clinical or diagnosed depression or anxiety may at times see life through a particularly negative lens, and they may interpret what's happening in life within themselves, in the relationship, in perhaps an excessively negative manner. And by no ill intention of their own, spontaneously and automatically read negative things into situations that aren't there, have difficulty managing frustration, emotions. And if you will, we've all heard the expression rose-colored glasses for when someone sees something as kind of Pollyanna or pie in the sky. Well, this is kind of the opposite. It's kind of seeing life through gray-colored glasses. And what we hope for is that with proper support and treatment, we can more effectively see our lives and see our relationships just through plain, clear lenses so that communication is not sabotaged and people can have a more satisfying life.
It's important to be able to recognize, absolutely, but I'm going to add to that, too, that for people to disclose information, to be able to be honest with oneself, right, and with one's partner, and to be able to get some assistance. And that might be through, it might be through medication. It may be through a specifically a diagnosis, first of all, and then medication and therapy. It's good to have insight, first of all, of what's going on for the individual in particular, and then to be able to understand how that is impacting your relationship as well. Understanding all of those pieces enables people to be able to reduce fear and stigma around mental health issues, especially in their relationship.
Right, and going along with what Bob said about, you know, if there is mental health issues and you're seeing things in a very negative light, that can also negatively impact your relationship, which can cause major issues. I mean, mental health is a risk factor for domestic violence, so that is something that's considered when police, you know, if it is a police investigation, whatever, those are some of the risk factors that are looked at. You know, and mental health is a big one in there. So it is important that if, you know, mental health is becoming an issue, that, you know, that is addressed right away. We also see that in the, especially in our older population, when you've got a spouse with dementia, so now there's some mental health, which, you know, also can translate into violence. And then, you know, these people are then having to deal with the court system and their mental health and trying to balance that out. So, you know, yes, so mental health is definitely can be a very negative impact on a relationship.
And I'm just gonna pop in here say I had a friend who was severely depressed, and he always said depression was like a wall you couldn't see possibilities through. So you give up. You can't see anything good ever coming along. And his spouse, she didn't understand. She thought he was doing this on purpose. You're being gloomy on purpose, and so that made her angry. And here he is already feeling really, really bad. And his spouse is angry because she thinks he's doing this on purpose. And what do you do in a situation like that? I mean, he tried to explain to her, you know, this. I just feel bad. I'm not doing this to be spiteful or anything like that. If they come in together as a couple, how can you help them in a situation like that?
Well, I think it's really important to have education around all of that, to be able to understand what the symptoms are, what is going on for the individual, and what is the illness versus what is the individual. And we all have personality issues, right, all of us, in terms of being able to manage anger and slight depression and all of those pieces. It's important to be able to recognize what is the disorder, the illness, and what is the individual.
It's important also, just to add to what Kristen says, to think of things like a diagnosed condition of depression or anxiety or bipolar disorder as genuine medical conditions. In other words, if I had a heart condition and it impacted my energy and it impacted my mood states, you know, perhaps more people would be more spontaneously sympathetic. Whereas perhaps we still think that depression is something that's just, well, just think your way out of it or pull your boots up or, you know, think a happy thought and everything will be fine, where it's much more complex than that. The second thing would be that we'll touch upon this probably later, that in communication and relationships, one of the mistakes we can sometimes get into is what we might call mind reading. Assuming I know what the other person is thinking, and assuming that I know what the other person is intending by the behavior, sometimes we mix up what is the intention of the person and how does it feel to me? And the way it feels to me must be their intention. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. And that has to be perhaps clarified by some communication.
And the other piece I just wanted to add quickly was that, you know, if you are in a situation, Dave, what you talked about with your friend there, if you've got one partner who is really struggling, then that one partner can actually come in and get some support and some skills and some tools on how to deal with, you know, their spouse's depression and things like that.
Let's talk a little bit more about keeping yourself healthy then. If you are supporting a spouse who's dealing with a mental health issue and you've come to terms with the idea that, yes, I understand this is a real disorder, it's a real disease, it still doesn't help me feel less exhausted. And how do I keep myself healthy while also supporting this person that I care about?
Well, there's a variety of tools to be able to put into place for oneself to keep oneself healthy. First of all, as an individual, to eat right, to sleep right, right? All of those fundamental pieces that we all need as human beings to be healthy. I think as well, it's important to be able to get support. It's important to be able to have formal and informal supports, to be able to reach out into our society, into our communities, to be able to be a part of what that is. I think it's really important to be able to get some couple counseling, some individual counseling, and perhaps even family counseling if that's needed. And it's important to maintain sort of an understanding that we are not responsible for another person. They are responsible, right? We are accountable for ourselves only. So it's important to be able to understand that in a relationship as well and have realistic expectations around that. Maybe able to separate the person from the illness specifically, and to avoid making the partner the focus of the relationship at all times. Yeah.
Now, that must be especially difficult, though, because I think a lot of people think, if this other person is depressed or they have some, I'm the one who did it. If you have a spouse say that to you, what is your response to them when they say, I think I'm to blame for this?
Well, that's the other piece, and that's what I was talking about early in terms of having boundaries and being able to set effective boundaries around oneself and state, hey, this is where I sort of end, and this is where my partner begins, and this is what our relationship is in the center of that. And how are we going to, A, communicate effectively? How are we going to have trust and honesty and respect and all of that? And how are we going to manage this? Because this is just one more issue in our marriage or our partnership, because others will come our way.
All right. Go ahead, Bob.
Just to add to that, I mean, when one falls into that trap of sort of a simplistic self-blame if a loved one is having a lot of difficulty with a mental health concern, I think, once again, we have to remember that these are genuine medical conditions and that the causes of them are kind of ultimately mysterious. You know, you hear many things that may be factors, and everyone's an individual, whether it's an inherited vulnerability, perhaps, the accumulation of stressors across life and so forth. But ultimately, each person's individual, and so simplistic self-blaming doesn't serve anybody well.
My guest today on Ask the Experts, we're talking with Bob Wilson and Kristen Gray and Seymour, who are counselors with Mosaic Counseling and Family Services. We're also joined by Julia Manuel, the coordinator of the Family Violence Project. If you'd like more information right now, go online to mosaiconline.ca or stick around for more of Ask the Experts here on 570 News. On the show today, from Mosaic Counseling and Family Services, I welcome Bob Wilson and Kristen Graham Seymour, counselors, and Julia Manuel, the coordinator of the Family Violence Project, as we continue our discussion about healthy relationships, how to strengthen them. And just before the break, we were dealing with managing mental health issues in a relationship. So let's talk a little bit more about that before we move on. Maybe you could give us some specific elements that a person dealing with a mental health issue can deal with to move forward.
I think it's just really important to recognize that there are three pieces that can really help an individual if they're able to sort of embrace that. The first one is to be able to identify what is going on and to be able to get education around the signs, the symptoms, the triggers, things that are happening, have some insight into the mental health issue specifically. And then to be able to, you know, if it's possible, to be able to gain access to medication and then have a proper diagnosis and treatment around that, and to be able to get some therapy, some psychotherapy, whether that be individual or counseling, in couple counseling.
So how do we go about that? Can we just come to Mosaic? Can you help us arrange for psychotherapy sessions? Or And how do people get over the stigma of maybe going to their very first psychotherapy session?
Well, I think one aspect is that it is available to anyone. That is to say, one doesn't need a referral to come to an agency like ours or other agencies that are comparable. They simply call the agency and they're directed to an intake department to chat with them and probably give a brief summary of their concerns, so that the intake person can either direct them to a counselor that might be a good fit, or at times also direct them to other resources in the community that might be more appropriate. I think we try our best to create a relaxed atmosphere. In other words, the building and the interior is not too clinical. It's rather warm and inviting. So we attempt in any way we can to make a person feel comfortable. Also, on the point of accessing medical support, often the family physician is the first resort when someone feels that they might have a difficulty that is really starting to impair the quality of their lives. If it's not a family physician, it may be a clinic physician. And then also, for example, at Grand River Hospital here in Kitchener, as well as in Cambridge Hospital, there would be a team of counselors, often psychiatric nurses, that one can approach 24 hours a day to discuss the matter and to see what might be the next step. And this is called the crisis clinic one finds in the emergency rooms of our hospitals.
So there we have our discussion on managing mental health issues. But all couples have issues. We all have stuff we deal with, and we need to get better at managing those issues, even if it's something as simple as the ability to take the garbage out. Because some of us seem to forget how to do that. I'm not guilty of that at all. But what are some of the most common issues couples struggle with on a day-to-day basis?
Some of the issues that we see as couples come in seeking counseling would be ones really that just fit the stuff of their lives. First of all, couples coming together into a relationship is a challenging thing in the first place. You've got two personalities, you've got two backgrounds, you've got two sets of, you know, the customary ways of doing things and so forth. So oftentimes the areas of concern are around communication, working things through, staying connected, stresses around finances, how we're going to manage jobs, employment, or the stresses of unemployment, the challenges of raising children, perhaps different parenting styles and so forth, issues in extended family, how we manage the in-laws and the in-law families, balancing our time together and our time for our separate interests, how we're each dealing with stresses and how that has an impact on the relationship, and also sometimes just the routine of life. How are we finding it? Is it satisfying? Do we need, a little injection of interest through more enjoyment or more quality time?
You mentioned something interesting, Bob, a second ago. You talked about kids. We haven't really talked about kids that much this hour, and I think it's probably important to go back to that one for a second. You talked about different parenting styles. It seems that in a lot of relationships, there's the good cop and the bad cop. There's the one parent that the kids will run to because they know that they'll say yes, and the other one who's more of the disciplinarian who has to, say, no, that's not a good idea. When you get that kind of imbalance, how do you help couples get through that?
Just to say a quick word on that, I think one of the things is, are the two parents consulting on matters before they deal with the children?
Right.
Are they on the same page so that they're not kind of played off, which is a natural impulse on the part of kids? And two, if they have disagreements with regard to styles of parenting or how we're going to deal with this permission or that, that if at all possible, deal with those disagreements not in the presence of the children so that there can be more of a united front.
I was just going to say I totally agree with that with the united front. I mean, you have to show the kids that the parents are together on the measures that are being taken. However, and I know I'm coming from the negative side, if you will, of the relationship, but, I mean, you also have to have parenting has to be done in a positive manner as well. So when you get to a stage where one spouse is being especially aggressive in their parenting style, I mean, that becomes an issue as well, where then the parents can reach out for help through Mosaic as well.
I think it's just really important to have the consistency in the parenting styles. And if one is on one extreme and the other is on the other, then there will be issues with the discipline, with being able to, educate children in the home to be able to just to be there for their kids. So it's important to have that communication, and it stems from the trust and the honesty and the respect that we were talking about earlier in the actual relationship itself.
So important then to have a conversation with your spouse about how you're going to deal with decisions regarding the children, and do we both have to agree all the time? Are we going to consult on every decision or just the major ones? Is that important? Is that something you should do?
The parents may well develop a sort of, I don't know what to call it, perhaps a regimen or a routine by which they're deciding if it's a major thing we need to consult, or we may delegate some of the small stuff in a sense to more one than the other. The mutual understanding and agreement that everyone is on the same page is really a primary issue.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think, too, when you're dealing with blended families, I think that sort of comes to be more to the forefront, because now you've got two people coming together, but you also have two ex-spouses or two, parents who are on the outside who are also, trying to put their parenting styles as well. So I think it's important that there is that huge discussion prior to coming together so that you know what path you're going to take.
And it's just important to be able to prioritize all of that and to have effective problem solving, right? Be able to come together to be able to say, how are we going to manage this, just as any other problem specifically.
All righty. Well, let's talk a little bit more about strengthening relationships again, because I think a lot of the folks who tuned in today heard the promo and said, well, I would love to know how to strengthen my relationship. We've talked about building self-esteem as an important part of that. How do we help each other, or actually help ourselves, build self-esteem in a relationship?
I think one of the elements in building self-esteem is just to know what it is, and there's a million definitions out there. I kind of think of it as a positive appreciation of myself as a worthwhile, valuable human being with both strengths and weaknesses, but the strengths and the weaknesses don't impact my fundamental worth and value. They're there. And my strengths are something I need to appreciate, my sources of resilience, And my weaknesses are not to be a source of discouragement, like I'm putting myself down, but those simply give me the direction for future growth. Probably the first thing that you see a lot of in self-help books and so forth around building self-esteem is, and it's already been mentioned a bit, taking basic care of oneself. Nutrition, rest, exercise, connections to other people, feeling safe and secure, a sense of accomplishment, a sense that I'm pursuing some of my interests and aspirations. All of these elements of basic self-care actually promote self-esteem. It's like, if I don't feel it sometimes, if I act like I feel I'm worth it, then I'll start to believe it. The second thing is we can boost each other's self-esteem, often by in little ways, expressions of appreciation, talking to each other to check in, say the goodbye in the morning and the welcome back in the evening. It may just be a couple of minutes, but noting you're there, you're important, I notice. Thank yous. We sometimes use better manners with people in our professional lives than we do with people in our personal lives. And just those little things, compliments. When a compliment is realistic and fitting, you really did well, or I'm proud of you, or something like that. Sometimes that's a great boost to self-esteem. And then finally, that we're doing what we can to encourage and promote the person's taking good care of themselves, believing in themselves, and so on.
What else is important in helping people to strengthen a relationship?
One of the areas certainly that comes up a lot in couple counseling is the question of communication. Communication is sort of the lifeblood of a relationship, but it's also an area that we can get snagged upon for a variety of reasons. One of the issues, and I think Kristen brought it up a little earlier, is listening skills. And the idea that listening is more than simply hearing the words as the vibrations across the air hit our eardrums. It's something more direct and more active and more effortful. If a person trying to talk to us and trying to talk to us about a problem feels that they've been heard, it may not be the whole solution, but it's a big step, often to de-escalating frustration and to allowing the person, the sender of the message, to feel valued. And sometimes we think about listening in three areas. One, feeding back to the person in our own words what we think we've heard. So what I hear you saying is, you feel upset when this happens. To which they might say, yeah, that's it, or not quite, let me try again. But telling the person I get it, not assuming that I get it and not assuming they know I get it, because sometimes the message sent is very different from the message that's heard in the mind of the receiver. The second part's validating. That is to say, I may not totally understand, I may not totally agree, but I respect what you're saying. It makes sense to me from what you've told me, from your point of view, and I could see how you could think that way. It's a subtle way of saying, I don't think you're crazy. And that's very important, because how often might we in weak moments say, when someone shares a feeling or upset, oh, that's crazy, where they need that. And the last piece is empathy, that is, I understand what you're feeling. I could see how you could feel that way. Once you've done that, if you can hold back our natural impulse to get defensive or to give our side, then communication's opened up and defensiveness is much less likely.
Well, personally, I would love it if more people told me they didn't think I was crazy, but that would just be one small part of the equation. We'll continue this discussion in just a couple of minutes. We do have to take another short break. My guests today from Mosaic Counseling and Family Services, Bob Wilson and Kristen Graham Seymour, who are counselors, and Julie Emanuel, who is the coordinator of the Family Violence Project. If you'd like more information right now, go online to mosaiconline.ca, or if you'd like to call Mosaic, the number is 519-743-6333. More of Ask the Experts is on the way. Stick around. It'll be back in just a couple of minutes here on 570 News. Thank you so much for joining us today on another edition of Ask the Experts. Joining me, Mosaic Counseling and Family Services. We're joined by Bob Wilson and Kristen Graham Seymour, who are counselors, and Julia Manuel, the coordinator of the Family Violence Project. And just before we move on to our next topic, we still have a couple of things to catch up on our last issue we were discussing, which is how we strengthen relationships. And Bob, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about managing conflict and finding time for each other.
In terms of finding time for each other, this is something that's going to be unique to each couple around what is possible and what's viable. But just that it's important to think, for one thing, I may have to make an appointment around this, because our lives, if they're extremely busy with a whole spectrum of responsibilities, we may have to plan Friday evening from 7 to 9. We're just going to do something for ourselves or what have you. It need not be spectacular in the sense of being dramatic, and it need not be expensive. It might be a walk, it might be a coffee, might be enjoying a movie together, checking in, talking, little entertainment, what have you. It can be simple, but it has to be deliberate, is the thing I'd say there.
Okay. Is there anything anyone else wants to add before we move on? Well, then let's talk a little bit about, first of all, let's once again tell folks, if they are having issues in their relationships, how do they get help?
Once again, one possibility through an agency like ours or other agencies that are similar would be simply to call and ask for intake for personal counseling, and then an intake worker helps you from there.
Okay. So again, that number is 519-743-6333. You can also go online to mosaiconline.ca, or you can email to info@mosaiconline.ca. Here we are in November, and November is Women Abuse Prevention Month. Maybe we can talk a little bit about the purpose behind this month.
So November is it's once annually that people step back and remember the women who are who have been killed by their intimate partners and are suffering domestic violence currently. So it's sort of a community awareness for people to realize that it does go on in our community, and it is a day-to-day thing. It's not, you know, those news headlines that you hear, you know, once in a while, that it is an ongoing issue within our community. So it's just an opportunity to bring that to the community's attention and talk about what we can do to help prevent it.
And you're right, we don't hear about this every day. So maybe someone could touch on a little bit about the statistics around family violence.
Okay, so for all of Canada, we're looking about, on average, that every 6 days a woman is killed by her intimate partner. You know, on any given day, there's about 3,000 women that access shelters. And each year there's about 40,000 arrests that result from domestic violence, which makes up 12% of violent crime in Canada. Now, locally, our stats, we have, at the Family Violence Project, we have the Domestic Violence Investigative Unit out of Mosaic, and they respond to a domestic incident every 1.25 hours. In 2010, we had 6,137 domestic violence calls that they responded to. And since 1995, there's been 15 intimate partner homicides with about 20 victims at this point.
I find those numbers really, frankly, kind of shocking. And I think it is because we don't hear about all of them on the news. And I'm hoping that everyone realizes that it's all our responsibility to do something about this. What can we do? Keeping women and children safe is a community responsibility. What can we do to help?
Well, there's several options that people have. I mean, one thing is, calling agencies for help like Mosaic or like the Family Violence Project. But the government's also put out an excellent program called Neighbors, Friends, and Family, and that was the result of the nurse that was killed in Kingston, Laurie DuPont, by the doctor there. And what happened there was that co-workers, employers were fully aware of what was going on, and there was actually 38 critical incidents that were reported where police responded, where he was suspended, and yet he still ended up killing her. So the government has taken some steps, and it also goes into Bill 168 as well around the workplace violence, but has come out with some really, really good information around how do you support somebody who you suspect is suffering domestic violence. You know, where do you help them go for help? How do you do some safety planning with them? And even how do you approach the person that you know is abusing their wife? So if you have a good friend who you know is you know, being verbally abusive or physically abusive, that how do you approach that person to say, hey, you need to go and get some help before things get worse?
The Family Violence Project of Waterloo Region, which of course is located at Mosaic, is the first of its kind in Canada and an international model of service. Julia, can you briefly tell me what it is?
So the Family Violence Project came out of the San Diego model, which is the Family Justice Center. And what it is, it's a collaborative of services that provides seamless service to victims of domestic violence. So when a woman walks through the front door, they have access to police, they have access to women's crisis services, the sexual assault domestic violence unit from the hospital, family and children's services, the Crown Attorney, victim witness, victim services, and also we have just started legal aid that is available to women who are associated with our services that can come once a week as well. So it's a collaborative of services that women, and it's self-directed, so when a woman walks through the front door, they can ask to access which services that they feel that they require.
Now, you did touch on this briefly a couple minutes ago, Julia, but as we finish up the show, I think it's important to recap it again. If you are or you suspect someone is a victim of domestic violence, what should you do?
I would say give us a call. Call Mosaic, ask to speak to somebody from the Family Violence Project, whether that's myself or whether that's the intake person or family services or women's outreach. But just call. You can give hypothetical situation. We'll help you with some, you know, some direction as to what to do. If that person wants to come in, they can also come in and it's anonymous. When you walk through the front door, you don't know what people are coming through the door for. So they can come in, we can have a conversation, and the skills and the tools can be provided to that victim.
And with a minute left in the show, as we wrap up, maybe Bob and Kristen can give us a couple of last-minute tips or a wrap-up on how you can start strengthening your relationship.
I think one of the things is to that we could touch upon would be the managing of conflict effectively before it escalates, to develop and cultivate some good communication styles. And there are many books out there. The websites have many things, as well as counseling as well. In other words, look to things early. Don't look for help. Well, I'm not saying don't look for help. But don't wait to look for help until things are just at the brink of collapse. Start early to work on things.
I think that's key, most definitely. I think also there's a really good point in terms of looking for opportunities to laugh, to be able to share in a sort of a lighter way as well, so that activities that are shared together are enjoyed, and you're enjoying each other's company first.
I want to thank you all for being on the show today. I think we all learned a lot. And even if it's something as simple as just giving your spouse or partner a compliment in the morning, saying, you look nice, have a great day. That's a great way to start. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you'd like more information, again, mosaiconline.ca is a great place to start. If you'd like to call to come in and make an appointment, 519-743-6333. My guest today, Bob Wilson, and Kristen Graham Seymour, counselors, and Julia Manuel, the coordinator of the Family Violence Project at Mosaic Counseling and Family Services. And thank you for listening to another edition of Ask the Experts here on 570 News.